Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Four Press Podcast presented by GolfWeek.com. I'm your host, David Dusek, and the PGA Tour announced its plan to bring professional golf back in a few weeks, starting at the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth, Texas, during a conference call this morning. And both USA Today and Golf Week's Steve DiMeglio and I were on that call. The episode you're about to hear is the audio track from a video we shot shortly after the call concluded, and you can see that video on GolfWeek.com. Steve and I talked about the challenges that are going to be facing the players and tournament officials as everyone tries to stay safe during the COVID pandemic as golf returns. We also talk about the challenges that lie ahead for golfers who are currently outside of the United States, as well as a whole lot more. You're definitely going to want to listen to this. Get stronger, hit longer, and end pain with Golf Forever. Created by Justin Leonard and co-author of the Younger Next Year Back book, Dr. Jeremy James, Golf Forever is the take anywhere online golf fitness program that helps you build a body primed for golf. It's simple, safe, and it works. At home, in the gym, on the golf course, Golf Forever's easy to follow exercises, warm-up routines, and course management videos will help you play your best pain-free. Sign up today at golfforever.com and use promo code GOLFWEEK for a free 14-day trial. Hi, this is David Dusek with Golf Week Magazine. I'm joined by my colleague, Steve DiMeglio. And Steve, you and I were just on a conference call with the PGA Tour where they were basically outlining how professional golf in the United States is going to come back during the COVID-19 pandemic. We're going to be having pro golf once again. What was your impression, or what was your sort of take as we were listening to the officials explain how this is going to work?
Well, it's going to be a whole new PGA Tour. But then again, we are in a whole new world. For those of out there are watching, this is a 37-page memo. 37 pages of guidelines on how to create the safest, healthiest bubble on out there when the PGA Tour starts moving around the country. My biggest takeaway, and I think it satisfied the players' concerns, is the layer of testing that they're going to have. Every player is going to be sent a pre-travel test kit. Every player and caddy will be sent tested immediately upon arrival, and then there will be other testing as the week progresses. And that testing is the COVID-19 test, the nasal test. And we learned that maybe by the time Colonial starts June 11th, that there might be a saliva test. There will be thermal testing daily, and there will be questionnaire testing daily. And again, they're trying to create as tight a bubble away from the public as they can, and away from the general public as they can, whether they're in Texas, South Carolina, Connecticut, Detroit, Iowa, and so on and so forth. So to begin with, that was my takeaway, that they set that the PGA Tour, which has worked immense hours and days to get this plan together through consultation with the country's leading experts in COVID-19 and in health measures, that it's a plan that makes a lot of the players, if not all the players, comfortable for the reason.
Yeah, I was struck by that. I mean, there's a lot of detail, and clearly they had a process and a thought process that was basically every touch point that the players, the caddies, the tournament officials, the media members was going to go through once you entered into the tournament area. You know, for example, before a player actually even starts and gets on the grounds, they're going to, as you said, have testing that's going to be done to them. The players and the people on the inside of the bubble, if you will, are going to get three different types of tests: the thermal scan, the questionnaire, the COVID-19 test itself with the swabs. I thought it was really interesting that they're going to try and rely on local laboratories that are not being overly taxed right now during the pandemic to expedite the testing, so that theoretically those tests are taking normal folks about 24 to 48 hours, give or take, to get the turnaround to find out what the result is going to be. It sounds like they gave the impression now it's going to be a few hours rather than a few days, and that makes a big difference. But they're only going to do that in regions where those facilities are capable. I think the optics of this, Steve, is you and I have talked about, and I think it becomes very obvious when you listen to the tour, are extremely important to the PGA Tour. They do not in any way want to be perceived, let alone do it, but even be perceived as taking resources away from local communities that need testing, that need masks, that need any kind of PPE. None of that stuff is going to go to the tour or to golfers if it's going to be needed in those communities for first responders and other folks. And that to me was the big takeaway, is that they really think, I was very impressed with the detail of the plan. I think, as you pointed out, it's going to take a lot of adjustment for players, for caddies, for us to see this new environment as professional golf for the foreseeable future. But what do you think is going to be the, if there's going to be a problem with this, or if there's going to be a group of players that are going to have issue with this, talk to me a little bit about, you know, who you think that's going to affect most, who's going to be most challenged by the current state of things.
Well, first of all, it should be noted that the PGA Tour is providing all of their own tests.
Yeah.
So they're not taking any tests away from any local communities. And they have said forthright, and I've talked to players who are on the Player Advisory Council, the player board, mm-hmm. That if they think there is any chance that they could be taking away from the locality that they're in, they're not going to do it. What? I'm not sure who it affects more, but I've talked to a few players in the last 12 hours, and they're all going to be under sort of unease. There's going to be some uneasiness there because, first of all, these players are going to be away from their families for the first time in 3 months.
Yeah.
They know that there's that risk, however small it is, of testing positive while away from their family and then have to quarantine and not be able to get back home for 2 weeks.
And we should note, Steve, that under these guidelines, families are not going to be allowed on site. Agents are not going to be allowed on site. Personal trainers will be allowed on site. They're going to have the more rigorous testing. The equipment van people will be on site, but they're nowhere near the players. They're going to be kept at arm's length. What I was really thinking of, though, if you don't mind my jumping in, talk to me a little bit about what the foreign players, the players who are not currently in the United States, are going to have to do if they want to get involved, because they have their own set of challenges too.
Well, that was a big takeaway from our conference call with the PGA Tour officials. The foreign players, and there's about 25 on the PGA Tour, and there's a few more on the PGA Tour Champions and the Korn Ferry Tour that are overseas, as well as their caddies, which are slightly bigger numbers. So we're talking about 100 people. They're subject to a 14-day quarantine once they arrive in the United States. So in addition to getting to the place, they have to quarantine wherever they land for 14 days. And then they proceed to go to where, either whether it be Colonial or South Carolina or Connecticut or Detroit. That's a pretty big burden. Now the PGA Tour says they're working with foreign governments, with federal governments, and see if that could be alleviated in any way. I can't see how it will be.
The only thing that I can think of, Steve, is that if the federal government, the PGA Tour, can work on getting players physically into the country, but I don't see exactly, to your point, how, and I don't know that the PGA Tour would want there to be the perception that golfers are getting preferential treatment and don't have to quarantine if they're coming from other countries. If you've got someone coming from South Korea or Australia or Germany or the UK, and that they're allowed to come in and bypass certain restrictions that ordinary travelers, business travelers, who are also risking by going on planes, going in rental cars, going to hotels, that somehow they don't have to do this stuff when other people do. I think that would be a bad look for the tour. But the challenge to the individual golfer, and to what you're talking about, the financial expense, caddies haven't been getting paid because no one's been playing golf in many cases. And if they've got to lay up at a hotel for 10 to 14 days, then go on some more, it's a burden. It's a big burden for them.
It's certainly going to be a big burden. And maybe they wait. You know, maybe they won't try to get to Colonial. Or to the Heritage, or to the Travelers. They might wait until July, first of all, to get a better handle on if this restart does happen, how it's going in that first month. Maybe travel restrictions will be eased by then. I don't know. Thankfully, it's not 100 players and 115 caddies. Yep. Thankfully, the number is relatively small, 25 to 35. But again, it's an undue burden on them. But for those here in the States, the players I've talked with, they know that they're all in agreement that they agree. They're comfortable with the plan. They know there's going to be uneasiness no matter what. Because, but they also know you can't mitigate all of the risk. You just can't. You can't give out until there's a vaccine, until there's treatments. You can't mitigate all the risk. And as one player said, there's a risk when you go to Walmart. There's a risk when you go to a Publix, a grocery store, and nobody's taking a test before you go in there. And they commend the PGA Tour for establishing this protocol, all these protocols that can do everything they possibly can without mitigating 100% your safety. They're doing everything they can to do as much as they can to make it as safe and as healthy a bubble as they can create. Because let's face it, the PGA Tour has lost untold millions. These players
have they said that $100 million in prize money to this point has not been handed out. But then that doesn't even take into account, that's to the players, the sponsorship dollars, the tickets, all of the other things, the ancillary things that are revenue generating for the PGA Tour have not been taking place since basically Friday of players. Like, all that stuff has been gone. Now, they've got a war chest of cash, and I'm not, you know, crying too much of a river, but it's a business, and it's entertainment. One of the things that is, I've been listening to you sort of explain to this, and I think a lot of people, it's going to look, when you tune in on television, and you're excited, as we all are, selfishly, like, we want sports back. I want sports back. It's going to look so different. Number one, with no spectators. No grandstands. There will be rope lines, we did learn, and that's actually sort of makes sense for making sure that those few of us who may be on site maintain social distancing. There's going to be TV cables and things like that, so you want to have people be careful when they're walking around and stuff. But the social distancing aspect between the player and the caddy even is something that they really reinforce. Everybody needs to social distance. You're not going to see player and caddy walking down the fairway shoulder next to shoulder and those kind of things. The level of detail that's going to go into this. And I think the opportunity for the PGA Tour to show that sports can come back in this environment, that we can show you how sport can come back, is a huge, number one, a huge opportunity and potentially a huge risk. And if it goes badly, then it sets not only golf, but also sport back, I think, a long way. So I think that they're being really smart in, if they're making a mistake, they're making a mistake on being overly sensitive and overly cautious, which I think that they should do anyway. What do you think the TV viewers experience when somebody tunes in Saturday of Colonial and they're excited to see golf? We know this tournament. We know what PGA Tour golf in our mind looks like. How different is this going to look to the average fan who's been denied a chance to sort of see live golf, live sports? Now they tune in to see it. How different do you think it's going to look?
Well, it's going to definitely look different. Like you said, there's the only thing, there's going to be rope lines, but no grandstands, no fans. And certainly there are going to be some players that are going to be cavalier with the recommendations, and they might not adhere to the 6 feet social distancing 100%. And I'm sure that there's going to be fans picking up a phone, trying to call in somehow, some way to alert that to people. But we've had a couple of times, you know, I was at the last time that I can recall, the Zozo Championship, where they didn't allow fans for one round because of rainstorms. And it was barren and empty grandstands. And there were no fans. And that was in Japan. That was Tiger's record tying 82nd win. But they played one round without fans. And I was there at Congressional back, I think it was 2012, early 2012, 13, 14, where there was a monster storm that ripped through and there were no fans on Saturday. And I remember the funny thing was that Tiger made an eagle. Now, granted, even though there were no fans, somehow, some way, there were still about 30 people following Tiger. Don't ask me how, yep. But that's what was the case. But he made an eagle and nobody clapped. You know, nobody clapped. There was a player on the eighth hole. There was a par three up the hill, the eighth hole, I'm pretty sure it was. And the player knocked it to a foot. He didn't know until a caddy in the group ahead of them was going, hey, it's a foot. And that's the way. So
I forget if you were there or not, but one year, you know, I forget if it was the Northern Trust or whatever it was. It was the first event of the PGA Tour playoffs. And it was being played, I believe, at Essex County. We had an earthquake on like the Thursday or the Friday of the tournament. And I remember being in the media center and seeing the wind, the lights shaking. And I thought like a train was going by nearby. And then there was a hurricane that was coming up the coast. And Dustin Johnson ended up winning the tournament. It was delayed, I think. It was shortened to 54 holes, no spectators on that Saturday, and like everybody boogied out of there by like 3 o'clock. And I remember going around and being out there early, and watching golf without spectators. Professional golf is a very weird thing. It's one of those things where it lacks the energy. It lacks, like, when you're watching NASCAR and you hear those engines, there's automatically a burst of adrenaline that's going to kick into everybody's mind. That sort of is, it goes without saying. Other contact sports where people get razzed up and you've got multiple teammates, you know, those things, if there's nobody in the stands at a football game, I could get that. Golf is a quiet game by nature. But at the same time, these guys, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, they feed off the energy of the moment. And a lot of that moment is created by the fans, the atmosphere that's created. How much does sort of the joy of coming back to competition for these guys outweigh the potential lack of energy that the fans and the environment would automatically give them? What's going to be happening in their minds, not outside the ropes when they, like us, have to think about everything, but once they get inside the ropes, how different an experience will it be playing for these guys?
Well, they're just going to have to generate their own excitement. And there's worse things in the world that they're going to have to do.
Yeah.
And also there's not going to be any fans to stop any wayward shots.
So people going way offline at this point.
Yeah, and we could, and there will still be spotters. There's another thing. Some of the volunteers, there will be spotters in certain places on the golf course, to help find wayward shots. Do you fist pump? I don't know.
My son was watching WWE, you know, with no fans, and it's basically like, you realize that as great as he gets into that kind of stuff, it's ridiculous without the fans. Like that is made by the energy of the fans and the whole thing. And seeing guys jump around and yell out to a crowd of no one is silly. But at the same time, I think that seeing professional golf, we're so thirsty for sport, at least here in the United States, you know, and it's a very selfish thing. We don't need sports, but it's something that has become a part of all of us that, I personally think that it is, as I said before, an enormous opportunity for golf to show that we can do this, that it can be done in this environment right now. It's also a tremendous opportunity for golf to gain a huge following because there aren't going to be too many other shows in town. The NBA is not going, at least for now. MLB, it sounds like we're hearing, what, around July 4th and empty stadiums and all that. So for a month or so, you could have professional golf be basically the world of professional sport. I applaud the PGA Tour for putting this together. I applaud also the players for getting involved. You had said sort of testing was one of the things that you're most concerned about. Do you have other concerns about how the tournaments are going to go off? Or do you think, having listened to players, talking to players, and now being presented with this by the PGA Tour, I'm pretty good with this. I think this is going to go off, and I can see how they can be successful given what we know now.
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. If we do restart June 11th at Colonial in the Charles Schwab Challenge, we're just going to have to see how it goes. I mean, what we can't do, as these players have said, we can't wait for a treatment. We can't wait for a vaccine because that could be a year to 18 months to 2 years away. We have to restart. And again, sorry, if you have to restart without fans, if you have to restart without that adrenaline that you get from your fans, if you have to restart and your caddy can't get within 6 feet of you, and you have to pull your club out of the bag and put it back in the bag, and so on and so forth. And the camaraderie is going to be cut down a lot too. You know, with social distancing on the practice range, social distancing on the practice putting green, that camaraderie that you see on a daily basis on the PGA Tour where everybody's joking around, that's going to be cut down too. But it's just going to be a new normal. But it beats staying at home right now. And the PGA Tour can be a stage for to provide entertainment for a nation starved for sport. Mm-hmm. They followed all the safety measures. And like I said, we can't wait for a vaccine. We can't wait for treatment because it could be 2 years from now. And a lot of the players have said, look, if they run into undue risk, if they say, hey, this ain't working out, I'm running the chance of I'm going to catch this, they're going to boogie back home.
Yeah.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Steven Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
One of the things that I think is worth noting, Steve, is that as the tours, I've talked to some folks as well at the tour about this, is they're putting these tournaments together and they're developing them, preparing for them, on the assumption that they're going to run. One of the things that they said on the call, and I've been told this, and I'm sure you've heard as well, is that they will pull the plug if they feel that the atmosphere is not right, if the local community, the state that they're in, is not in a condition where holding and running a tour event is safe, plausible, not putting undue burden on the local communities, on the state for the testing and all the different things, that they'll pull the plug. So I think that right now we feel pretty good about it. We shouldn't be surprised, and in some ways you would almost feel good if conditions changed and the tour said, you know what, we got to pump the brakes here, that unfortunately, as much as we'd love to do this at Colonial, it's not going to happen. Hilton Head for the RBC Heritage is a different situation, and given what we know now, we can do that, and that'll be the start. Because turning a tournament on is a lot harder than turning one off, meaning that it's all this preparation that's getting done now, getting the tournament organized in a very new way, takes a lot more energy and a lot more logistical power than pumping the brakes and saying, you know what, we got to turn this thing off. I think that they will wait until as late as they can to officially cancel some of these things or postpone them even further, if a postponement is even possible, which probably not given the schedule the way that it is. But something I think people need to ready themselves for is that we could be 2 weeks out from Colonial and then get the word, it's not happening. And because these different things have not been met, the safety's not there, the testing, they need these labs to do tests for the community, not for us, whatever it's going to be. I've been told on numerous times by people, like, look, it's a lot easier to turn it off than at the last second to, hey, everybody, come to Colonial Country Club, come to TPC River Highlands, come to, you know, Harbortown Golf Links. We'll see you there in 3 days. Doesn't work that way. There's so much more to it. Schedule wise, player wise, let me ask you this, since this is a golf chat that you and I are having, and I think that there's probably some bylaw that says that we have to sort of talk about this. When will you expect to see, and what do you, I don't expect to see Tiger at Colonial, for example, given the fact that the PGA Championship as it stands now is August in San Francisco. Fingers crossed for the Bay Area that tournament can happen, and what we know with U.S. Open, Ryder Cup, back-to-back. What do you think Tiger Woods and some of the star players are thinking about in terms of scheduling? When would you expect to see Tiger, and what do you expect this to do as far as scheduling for some of the elite players?
Well, one of the elite players is Brooks, and Brooks Koepka. And he said in a talk show, he told Golf Channel yesterday that he's planning on playing the first three. We have no word from Tiger. But the little I know of him, and I would say I'd be surprised if he showed up at Charles Schwab. I think he wants to sit back and see how this goes. If I were to have to guess, I think he might give it a month, maybe even 5 weeks, 6 weeks. Might not play until Memorial. And that's in July. And then from there, go to the PGA Championship. But I think Tiger, who's obviously the biggest star, he's going to sit back and wait. I think he's going to wait and see how this goes, and see if they can pull this off. Anybody test positive, it's very minimal, very low numbers. And then maybe he'll play Heritage. Maybe he'll play Travelers. But right now, I don't know if he has a target date. I think he just wants to wait and see. Obviously, we know he's going to play against Phil Mickelson when he's along with Peyton Peyton Manning against Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson 2 Sundays from now. And we'll see. Obviously, I would hope somebody would ask him, what is your intention? Hopefully, maybe they set up a call with us and what is his intention. But I'd be surprised if he played any of the early tournaments. But then again, he has shocked this before.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think that every player has to huddle up with their family, huddle up with their team and say, what's in the best interest of all of us? You know, from a health and safety standpoint first. I think that any player that goes out to any of these events, and if their mind is back home and they're constantly worrying about family, which is 100% reasonable and fine in my book, then they just don't go. You know, I just because the tournament is on doesn't mean that I feel that they need or should feel compelled that they have to compete. I know some of the local tournaments, me being up here in Connecticut, on social media, I'm seeing the Travelers Championship is putting things out on Instagram and on Twitter and stuff like that about some of the big name players that have committed to playing just to try and create some buzz about the tournament, even though there will be no spectators. There's not going to be that stuff, and you're not going to see Rory McIlroy down in New Haven eating pizza. But it'll be interesting to see how the elite players try and put together a schedule, how much they want to get out. I think that, as you had already said, they've got to be chomping at the bit to want to compete. Jordan Spieth played in that one tournament, small as it was, in Texas. And I saw Victor Hovland was out there and seemed to have had a pretty positive experience and wants to play in some other stuff. And there's some guys out in Scottsdale right now playing, you know, in some local stuff. I think everybody's chomping at the bit, but they're going to have to sit down and take a look and say, like, okay, it's one thing for me to hop in my car, go 20 minutes away and play at a club where I know that environment. I'm going to be sleeping in my own bed, you know, everything. It seems more manageable. Getting on planes, I think the players, for the most part, probably feel pretty safe getting on a plane. They're frequent travelers. Not nearly as many of them fly private is what a lot of people think. But the guys who can will. And I've talked to a couple of players and they're like, yeah, I will feel safe doing this, but not everybody will and not everybody should. I'll be fascinated to see how it all breaks out when we're going to see players like Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler and those guys, when we're going to see Rory playing, and how tournaments try and promote it, how the tour tries and promotes it, because that's a big part of the package. And right now it's all going to be driven towards network TV ratings. There's no reason to promote anything if you can't buy a ticket, you know? So any last thoughts before we sort of sign off here, Steve, from what you've seen and what you're feeling?
No, I'm just hoping that there is no big spike in Texas or across the country, and that the PGA Tour can restart on June 11th, and hopefully everything goes well. It'll be a new normal, and slowly but gradually we'll get back to some type of normalcy, and we'll have live golf to watch again.
Yeah, me too. I think that pretty much sums it up. I'm eager for them to safely get started. I want to see sports. I want us to do the right thing so that in the long run, we can all enjoy it the way that we used to enjoy it, which was great, but we've got to be smart right now. And hopefully everybody out there who's going to watch this and listen to this will be smart. Stay safe. Steve, thanks a lot, pal.
You got it. See you down the road, hopefully.
You got it.